More Expedition Through the Bible on KEQX 89.7. The views, opinions, beliefs, and content expressed on the Harris and Moore Expedition Through the Bible are the sole production of the Harris and Moore Expedition and its agents. The views, opinions, and belief expressed on this show may not be the same as those of KEQX or any of its agents. This show is brought to you by the Park Heights Church of Christ in Hamilton, Texas, the Patrick Street Church of Christ in Dublin, Texas, the Hillcrest Church of Christ in Stephenville, Texas, and the Bangs Church of Christ in Bangs, Texas. Good evening. I'm David Harrison. I'm here to welcome you to the Harrison Moore Expedition Through the Bible. I want to remind you right at the top of the hour that this is a call-in talk show, and the number to call if you'd like to get in on the conversation, it's going to be a good one today, is 254-445-2473. Let me repeat that. 254-445-2473, or you can email us at keqx@rocketmail.com. For those of you on the web, it's harrisonmoore.org, and that will take you right to the KEQX website. This is an interesting time of year and an exciting time of year because it is a time of voting. And we need to fulfill our patriotic duty, to say the least. We want to encourage everyone to go vote. If you can go vote early, then go do so. If you want to wait in line, be sure and wait in line for it, because this is a very important time of the year, and it's more important for some than it is others. But we do know that that voting is the way that we get to express our views, the way that we get to express the things that we want, the way that we want them. There have been numerous quotations that we read last week concerning voting. One of these is from Noah Webster. I'd like to read it again. It says, "When you become entitled to exercise the right of voting for public officers, let it be impressed on your mind that God commends you to choose for rulers just men who will rule in the fear of God." And that is from Noah Webster, 1832. And we should be voting in that fashion and not voting according to our pocketbooks. Tom, righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. And this is Proverbs chapter 14, verse 34. And the only way that we can be a righteous people is to be a God-fearing people.
That's exactly right. And we need to take our opportunities to let our voice be heard. We're told many times that if we allow the unrighteous to rule and we do nothing, then they're the ones that's going to be in charge of everything. And so it's important for us to be the kind of people who are going to stand up and be heard. You know, it's amazing to me how sometimes people think that because of the so-called separation of church and state, that we all, as religious people, ought not to be involved in politics.
Mm-hmm.
But as Edmund Burke said, all that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. And we have the perfect opportunity come November to do our part in allowing good men to stand forth and teach us and bring us into the way of righteousness. Because, you know, when you look at our government and the way things are going today, it seems so we're getting further and further away from righteousness.
You're absolutely right, Tom. And I want to give just a little foretaste of what this program is going to be about today, and then I've got a few announcements I need to make. But the one of the reasons that we are going to deal with the evils of alcohol and what alcohol can do to you and to your family, to your loved ones, we're doing that tonight because there are many people concerned in the De Leon, Dublin, Comanche area. De Leon has got a they're going to be able to vote, Tom, on whether or not to legalize the selling of alcohol in the city limits of De Leon. We want to let people know what the Bible has to say about that, and we're going to do that in just a moment. Get your phones ready, 254-445-2473, or email us at keqx@rocketmail.com. Let us know what you think about this situation. We would like to hear from you. If you think it's a bad idea, if you think it's a good idea, we'd still like to hear from you. What we're going to do is give you the biblical reasoning for why we say it's a bad idea. But before we do, I've got a couple of announcements we need to make. We're going to have a gospel meeting at the Hillcrest Church of Christ beginning Sunday, October the 31st with Richard Massey. Now, Richard Massey's been one of the guest speakers on this program a couple of times, and Richard is a excellent gospel preacher, and we would invite you to come and listen to the gospel Sunday through Wednesday. And the theme is Jesus Christ, the Son of God. At the same time that that's going on in Hillcrest in Stephenville, Rick Popejoy is going to be holding a gospel meeting in De Leon, Texas, and the theme of that gospel meeting is going to be Desperate Households. So if you want to listen to some good gospel preaching and some good themes, be sure and make plans to attend one of those gospel meetings. Last week, Tom, we started talking about this legalization of the selling of alcohol in De Leon. There were a lot of people concerned there, and this is the reason that we're doing this, and it's right before election time. We want people to make good, informed decisions when they make votes on these kinds of things. People, as we mentioned last week, they're being fed a lot of lies. Lies like this is going to really help the community. Really, the only ones I see that it could help are people that are going to sell it. There may be an extra police officer or two hired, but that's not going to come without expense, so I don't know who that's going to benefit. But there are a lot of statistics, and we're going to get into some of these statistics that are associated with alcohol and drunkenness and with all of the things that are going along with that. Now, one thing that we did mention last week, Tom, is that drunkenness is condemned by man, and it is condemned by God as well. This is something we can't get away from. Drunkenness is condemned by man, but it's condemned by God first. And we want to focus on that tonight, and we want to let everybody know why.
You know, the Bible tells us that God forbids drunkenness. And we looked at some of these passages last week, but in Galatians chapter 5 and verse 21, where it talks about the works of the flesh, it talks there about drunkenness. And he says there that they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. Now, mm-hmm. David, you can't get any clearer than that if you're involved in drunkenness. In 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 10, it says that all drunkards, they will not inherit the kingdom of God. Verse 9 there. In Ephesians chapter 5, we're told not to be drunk with wine, whereas in is excess. But, you know, there are a lot of people say, well, I don't drink. I drink, but I don't get drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we looked last week also how the Bible defines drunkenness. For example, in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 8, it says, be not drunk with wine. And we noted how that word drunk there in that passage comes from a Greek word that means to grow drunk or the marketing, the beginning of drunkenness. So according to this passage and this word, it means it's the process of becoming drunk that God condemns, not just being drunk and staggering drunk, but also the process by which one becomes drunk is also condemned in the Bible. But you know, David, when people think about the drinking of alcohol, one of the things that people seem to always want to set forth is that they say that, well, the Bible does not condemn alcohol use in moderation. It does not say, they say, that it's wrong to drink mm-hmm. socially. Well, that's pretty much an invalid argument, isn't it?
Sure it is.
You know, God does not say a lot of things are wrong, but he gives us lots of principles that tell us that they are.
Right.
Can you imagine how big the Bible would be if he had to tell us every single thing we're not to do? I think you mentioned last week the Bible does not say you shall not hit your wife.
Right.
But every one of us knows that that's not the right thing to do.
Based upon the principles that are taught.
Exactly right. And so we need to realize that the Bible is very clear in many ways how we're not to be involved in alcohol and how it is a sin to be involved in such.
Right.
But one of the things that I think it's important for us to realize along with this use of alcohol and the Bible's condemnation of it is how big a problem this is. Now, do we have a caller? Let's save some of this for a moment, and let's listen to our caller. Caller, are you there? What's your name?
This is Jim.
Hello, Jim.
Hi, how y'all?
We're good, thank you. Appreciate you calling.
Okay, just a quick question. Have you had any emails or anything concerning, well, Jesus turned water into wine, where he was there at the wedding in Cana, you know? I know, you know, a lot of people say, well, there's wine right there, and it's social drinking is okay. And if we look at, well, you quote Habakkuk 2:15 last week, where it's condemned, Christ lived under the Old Testament. If Christ turned water into wine and alcoholic beverage and made all of those, and Tom probably knows very well about the amount. I've read it, but don't remember exactly. It is a lot of wine. And if Christ did that, he's actually okaying social drinking and to the point of excess, and therefore that makes 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 22 absolutely false, where it says, Peter says he'd had no sin. So I just wondered if anybody called in and mentioned anything about Jesus turned water into wine, because that's the first thing I hear when I say, you know, social drinking is not okay. Well, Jesus turned water into wine. I'll hang up and listen to you. Bye.
Okay, thank you for your call, Jim.
Well, that is a argument that a lot of people use in regard to the drinking of alcohol. They say that Jesus approved the use of alcohol in moderation because he turned water into wine. Well, that account is found in John chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. And there on that day, Jesus performed a miracle by turning water into wine. Now, the question we have, as we've mentioned before, that does not necessarily mean that it's alcoholic beverage, does it, David?
No, sir. There's no indication whatsoever that
That's right.
it is.
And I think by looking at the text carefully, we're going to see very clearly that it is not alcoholic beverage that he makes there. The question that we want to ask, you know, in Genesis or in John chapter 2 and verse 10, the governor of the feast said that the wine that Jesus made was the good wine or the best wine. Now, according to scholars and historians, they would consider the best wine, the good wine, the new wine, as that which was freshly squeezed grape juice. And so they considered what Jesus made as grape juice and not some intoxicating wine.
Well, Tom, you know, one of the big mistakes a lot of people make is assuming that word wine has the same connotation today as it did in the first century when this was written, because the word wine is used throughout the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament, and the only way that we can know if it is an intoxicating source is by the context.
That's right.
And we've got to look in the context. So wine can be grape juice, or it can be fermented alcoholic beverage, one of the two. And it has to be made purposefully, that alcoholic beverage. You and I were looking over some things earlier today. Grape juice does not turn into wine by accident. Grape juice either sours and turns into some type of a vinegar tasting sour drink. But in order for someone to make it alcoholic, they must purposefully add yeast to this drink in order to make it happen. So when people, and Jim is very, very right. I've heard the argument used all of my life. Well, Jesus turned, water into wine, and so that means he approves of this, of our social drinking, but there's absolutely no indication whatsoever that he did that, and we have scriptural proof that the wine, and that word wine, is not alcoholic in every sense, and we'll get to that scriptural proof in just a moment.
You know, in the words that are used in the Bible concerning wine, yawin, the Hebrew word, is the one most commonly used. And oinos in the New Testament is that which is most commonly used referring to wine. And it's interesting how those words are used in the Old Testament. For example, in Isaiah 65 and verse 8,
mm-hmm.
It says, "Thus saith the Lord, as the new wine is found in the cluster, And so there it tells us that wine is found where, David?
Right there on the vine.
Right there in the vine. And so that shows us then that wine is not, does not always refer to an alcoholic beverage. And not only that, you'll notice also in Isaiah chapter 62, verses 8 and 9, it says, "There and the sons of the stranger shall not drink thy wine, for the which thou hast labored, but they that have gathered it shall eat it." And so what are they saying about wine there, David?
It's the same thing. It's coming right off of the cluster. It's
coming
right
off
the vine.
It's something you're
eating.
It's a grape. Sure. So they call the very grape on the vine, they call it wine. And notice in Isaiah chapter 16 and verse 10, it says, "The treaders shall tread out no wine in their press." Well, what do you tread on to make wine, David? Grapes. Right?
Absolutely.
And so here we have another passage that shows us that wine is not always an alcoholic beverage. Sometimes it refers to the actual grape on the vine. Sometimes it refers to the juice of the grape. And sometimes it does refer to an alcoholic beverage. But getting back to Jesus, you know, remember in Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 15, what does it say there, David? You remember?
Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 15 says, "Woe unto him that gives his neighbor drink, that puts thy bottle to him and makes him drunken also."
Now, what would that say about Jesus? Jesus on this day made an alcoholic beverage and gave it to all those people that were there already, having had drunken already. What would that make Jesus?
That would make him a sinner against God.
And so that alone should prove to anyone who has an honest mind that Jesus on this day did not make an intoxicating wine. He made pure grape juice. And these people in that day realized that because they said, "Where did this come from? Where did this new juice come from?" Jesus made that on that very day.
Well, right, and what we need to understand is this word wine is not an alcoholic beverage every time that you see it used in the Bible. And so when we understand that, then this starts making a little common sense to us. Now, I think we have looked at that. I do believe that we have proven that this is not a valid argument for social drinking whatsoever, the fact that Jesus turned water into wine. And we would like, again, to invite you to call in 254-445-2473 or email us at keqx@rocketmail.com. When we're talking about the evils of alcohol, we have some statistics to back up what God is saying here. You see, God is not telling us that he doesn't want us to drink this stuff for nothing. He wants us to be sober. He wants us to be alert. He wants us to have all of our mental faculties intact when we live this life each and every day that we live it. And we have some facts, some statistics here we would like to throw at you. For those individuals in De Leon, Texas, especially that are contemplating voting on this thing, that don't have an opinion one way or the other, we want to encourage you to listen to some of these statistics that we have. Alcohol is at least a contributing factor to the following: 66% of the people in jail nationwide are in jail because they have been drinking alcoholic beverage. 66%. Can you imagine how few people would be in jail today, Tom, if they weren't drinking?
And why would anybody want to add that kind of difficulty, that kind of evil to their communities? You know, you have enough of that already without making it easy for them to have that very thing. Well, it would just destroy a community.
Well, you know, I read the jail log in the Stephenville Empire Tribune, and I thought that 66% was a little weak. And sure enough, I think it is, because 80% of the people are in jail in the state of Texas. Evidently, it is something that that Texans hold more dear than the rest of the people in the United States of America. But here's one that may interest you. 50% of all divorce cases in Texas are attributable to an alcoholic or an alcohol consumption of alcohol in some way, form, or fashion. 50% of the divorces are attributed to that. It is the number two cause of divorce in the United States of America, Tom. If nothing else, if you loved your wife If nothing else bothers you, that ought to bother you more than any one thing that you can come up with.
That's exactly right. And, you know, the problems in our society are very big in regard to alcohol and alcoholism. For example, the World Health Organization estimates that about 76 million people throughout the world suffer from alcohol-related disorders. And not only that, recent studies have shown that it has been discovered that 53% of adults in the United States have reported that one or more of their close relatives have a drinking problem.
Wow.
And what are we doing, David, when we allow that alcohol to be so readily available in our own communities? Well, we're aiding and abetting that very difficulty that's going on in our lives.
Right.
And not only, maybe not us, but people in our families. You know, it's also alcohol dependency and alcohol abuse cost the United States an estimated $220 billion every year. This dollar amount was more than the cost associated with obesity, $133 billion, and also cancer, $196 billion. And so you can see how great, how large a problem alcoholism is.
Well, what we have is we have God's word being bolstered just by the statistics themselves.
Right.
I mean, he's not telling us to stay away from that just because he doesn't want us to touch it. He's trying to tell us that not only is it a sin, but it will hurt you. It
God
will hurt
knew
you
exactly what he was talking about.
You better believe he did. You better believe he did. We just got statistic after statistic. 65% of all child abuse cases involve alcohol. 50% of all motor vehicle accidents involve alcohol. 50% of rapes, 78% of assaults, 85% of all murders involve alcohol.
You know, one of the things that really scares me, David, is that according to U.S. alcoholism statistics, it has been reported that 2.6 million binge drinkers were between the ages of 12 and 17.
Wow.
And so that's something that has really is bolstered when you allow the sale of alcohol in your communities. And one other thing in that regard, research has shown the total cost attributed to the consequences of underage drinking to be $58 billion per year. This is our young people
underage
getting
drinking.
Involved.
Yes,
right.
Yes. I understand we've got a caller on the line. Caller, will you give us your first name and your comment or your question, please?
That's just Jim again.
Yes, sir, Jim.
While I was dialing up there, I heard Tom talking about the underage drinking. To the good people in De Leon, folks, look at what, I don't know if they have a project graduation there, but that project graduation is an outgrowth of some concerned parents who woke up and says, graduation night, my young people go out and drink, and some of them lose their lives. Project graduation is a direct result of underage drinking.
You're absolutely right.
And maiming of young people who have their whole life ahead of them. It's just a terrible waste. I'll hang up.
Oh, good. Very, very good point, Jim. An extremely good point, actually, that we have all kinds of things that take place trying to offset the effects of alcohol. I've got an interesting story. I know a man that has an industry, and his problem every Monday morning was getting his people back to work. And the ones that showed up, most of them were hungover. The others did not show back up. And then what he would have is the wives of these men coming in along about Tuesday or Wednesday of that next week and trying to draw an advance on the paycheck, because they didn't have any money to buy groceries for the kids that are at the house because the husband went out and spent all the money on a drinking binge. And so this man that had this industry, he tried something, and it worked. He changed their payday from Friday till Tuesday. And when they came home Tuesday with the money, then the wife took off to the grocery store and bought her groceries, and by the end of the week, there wasn't enough money for him to go off on the drinking binge, and he showed up sober the next Monday. It was a win-win situation for everybody. So there are a lot of things that come out of trying to offset the evils of this alcohol.
Just one more thing here before we go into our break that I want to mention with regard to our youth. And this is one of the things that really, really concerns me is the access our youth has to alcohol. It says, according to one study, almost 11% of 8th graders, 22% of 10th graders, 27% of 12th graders report binge drinking.
Wow.
Now, binge drinking is 5 drinks in a row in the last 2 weeks. That shows what kind of problem our society is having. And when these young people grow up into adults, what happens? Well, it just gets worse. And then we find ourselves in difficulties with marriage problems, alcoholism, death, car accidents, all related to alcohol. David, God knew what he said when he says, stay away from it.
Absolutely. And there's one more thing that I would like to throw in on that is most of these beer commercials, and I'll be the first to tell you, they are clever. They are some of the most clever commercials on television. They are pointed and they are targeting a young audience.
Yes.
And they're getting their point across, and what they're doing at the end of that, trying to save their face, is they say, drink responsibly.
Yeah.
God tells us in His Word there is no such thing as drinking responsibly, and we're going to cover that when we come back.
Brethren, we have met to worship and adore the
Pony Express was a colorful part of American history. It ran from St. Joseph, Missouri to Sacramento, California, about 1,900 miles. The trip was made in 10 days. 40 men, each riding 50 miles a day, sped along the trail on 500 of the best horses available. To conserve weight, clothing was light. Special lightweight saddles were used. The mail pouches were thin and light also. Letters were written on thin paper and postage was $10 an ounce. Yet each rider carried a full-size Bible. It was presented to him when he joined the Pony Express, and he carried it with him on every trip. Oh, how we need Bible-toting and Bible-quoting Christians today. The Park Heights Church of Christ is committed to spreading the gospel to Central Texas and beyond by speaking the truth in love. Friends, we would like to invite you to visit our services. We have Bible classes for all ages Sunday mornings at 9:30. Our morning worship services begin at 10:25. Our evening services begin at 6 p.m. on Sunday. And we also have midweek Bible studies on Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m. If you would like to contact us, please call 254-386-3953. We meet at 1300 East Boynton Street in Hamilton, and our mailing address is P.O. Box 107, Hamilton, Texas, 76531. You may also visit us on the web, www.parkheightscoc.com. We look forward to seeing you soon.
I come to the garden alone.
The prophet Isaiah said, "The people walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwelt in the land of the shadow of death upon them, a light has shined." Isaiah chapter 9 and verse 2. Years later, centuries later, when the apostles began to preach concerning Christ's church, this same area saw many people become Christians, and we read that in Acts chapter 8. Indeed, the light of Christ's redemption shone brightly. The light of Christ makes a difference in your life. The darkness of sin, you can find the light of His forgiveness. In the darkness of ignorance, His wisdom illumines the way. In the darkness of trials and trouble, His presence dispels the blackness. Whatever darkness threatens to overshadow your life, let Jesus be the light who drives it away. Jesus is the light of the world. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no man comes unto the Father but by me. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved, but he that disbelieves shall be condemned." Mark chapter 16 and verse 16. You are invited to come worship with us at the Hillcrest Church of Christ, where the light of Christ is taught. Bible class begins at 9:45 a.m. Sunday morning, with worship following at 10:30. Correspondence courses are also offered. Call us at 254-968-8167. Let us worship the Lord together in spirit and in truth.
Welcome back to the Harrison Moore Expedition. Tonight, today we're talking about alcohol and its evils and the Bible's condemnation of it. And we left off a moment ago when talking about the TV ads concerning alcohol and all of its use and talking about how we're to drink responsibly. One of the things that I mentioned and or thought about was it's interesting to me that when they're making these advertisements about alcohol, have you noticed, David, that the people that are in these ads are always beautiful women, handsome men, and I've never seen a pot-bellied, bearded, ugly fella on any of these commercials. Have you?
No, I haven't. They're not on those commercials. They're on some others, but not on the one that's selling the beverage.
You know, and that tells us the devil's a pretty wise man.
You better believe it.
Because he wants to paint evil as something beautiful. And I was told an illustration a long time ago that really stuck with me. And it tells you how that the devil tries to paint the picture of sin into something very beautiful. Let's just say you were to take a pie shell, and then you take this pie shell, and inside of it you put some maggots. You put sugar and cinnamon, and then you put a nice crust on top of it and make all the fancy things the ladies do and cook it. And when you see that, David, what do you see?
Well, you see something appetizing.
Something that looks good, something pretty, but as soon as you cut it and bite into it, you see it for what it really is,
right?
Maggot pie. And that's exactly what we have with alcohol. On the TV, on the radio, they painted a beautiful picture as being something nice and beautiful, but it's going to step up and bite you.
Right.
The devil wants to make sin look good.
Absolutely. And we're warned about this all throughout the Bible. And the one passage that comes out to me that just kind of flows right into what you're describing there is 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8, when he says, "Be sober, be vigilant, for your adversary the devil as a roaring lion walks about seeking whom he may devour." And that's the way he does. He changes terminology. He changes the way things look so that it really doesn't end up looking the way that you thought it did. Now, you know, when we were talking just a moment ago about Jesus changing the water into wine, this is one of the excuses, or one of the justification that a lot of people use for their involvement in social drinking, but that will not hold water. There is another one that is used, and I'd like to bring up. It's found in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 23. And this is where the Holy Spirit, by the way, is the author of this. Paul is just the penman. The Holy Spirit, through Paul, writes a letter to Timothy. And he's telling him and instructing him in the way that he needs to conduct himself and the way that he needs to do some things. Obviously, Timothy has got a stomach problem. Because in verse 23, he says there, "Drink no longer wine or water, but use a little wine for your stomach's sake and your often infirmities." Now, those often infirmities are reoccurring infirmities. And so he says, drink no longer water, or drink not only water, but also drink a little wine for your own stomach's sake. Now, the implication there is that Timothy was not going to drink any fermented wine because he knew it was wrong. He knew it was sinful, even when he was sick. And so the instructions come from the Holy Spirit through Paul that he can drink a little wine for his stomach's sake. Tom, to me, what I see here is that a lot of people want to run with this and say, well, now, there he told him to drink a little wine in a socially acceptable fashion, and that is not what he's saying, not even close to what he's saying there.
You know, if drinking fermented or intoxicating wine was the common practice of those days, why was it necessary for Paul to give Timothy an apostolic command to get him to drink it? Well, it was obvious that Timothy had been abstaining from drinking such wine, and he was not a social drinker. And so this proves the very opposite of what people say it's trying to prove.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that kind of people try to use this in the wrong way is saying, well, I drink a little wine medicinally because I want to relax in the evening.
Right.
Well, to relax in the evening or to get away from it or just to be social, that's not for medical purposes. You know, our modern medicines are quite adequate to handle any kind of medical problems that fermented wine may have been used by Paul in his day. But to say I'm taking a little wine because I want to relax is not for medicinal purposes.
Right. So we do have an authority here,
yes,
to take it for medicinal purposes. So then when we take cough syrup that is probably contains anywhere from 20 to 30% alcohol in there.
Dextromethorphan 44, for example.
Yes. And there is a warning on there, by the way. Do not take this if you're going to drive, if you're going to do anything but go to sleep. That's the reason they call it nighttime medicine, because they want you to go right straight to bed after you've done it. But when we look at this situation here for medicinal purposes, we can't stress that out to be something that it's not. You don't go out when people abuse their medications and they get hooked on their own medications. They have to understand that they're taking their life in their own hand when they do it. The same thing can be happening here if it is used for medicinal purposes. I don't know of anything right now that can be offered by the medical industry we've got to recommend a wine for a blood builder. Mm-hmm. Nothing that they can recommend from the intoxicating alcoholic portion is any better than the non-fermented grape juice.
Exactly right. And I've had doctors and people from the nursing profession or the medical profession tell me that grape juice, pure grape juice, offers everything that you need that the people say that an alcoholic wine would offer you in helping to build up your body. And so the pure grape juice is all that we need in that regard. But again, we cannot say that the use of alcoholic content in a medicine is wrong, because Paul said, Timothy, you need to be doing this, but it's strictly for medicinal purposes only, not for relaxation, not to get away from it, not to be sociable, but for medical problems.
Right. Now, I'd like to get back to some more statistics, because we've got a lot of people that are going to vote here not too long from now, and All I want them to understand is what the Bible has to say. Now, they hear all the time what men have to say about this. Let's see what God has to say. But I want to throw some more statistics out there as to the evils of this alcohol. The American Automobile Association says, quote, "The effects of alcohol begin with the first drink." It's not a cumulative effect. It begins with the very first drink. And the first effects are impairment of judgment, reasoning, the weakening of self-control, and normal inhibitions. This is the reason not only getting behind the wheel is a dangerous thing and dangerous not only to the individual that is behind the wheel, but dangerous to all of our loved ones as well. But when you have the weakening of self-control and the normal inhibitions, this is the reason why they serve this kind of stuff at these nightclubs, so that their inhibitions will be weakened for certain purposes. And we'll get back to that in just a moment. We have a caller on the line right now. Caller, would you give us your first name and your comment?
Yeah, this is Barry.
Hey, Barry.
Most of y'all know me. Know I'm a school teacher.
Yes, sir.
And the state spends billions of dollars trying to rehab people and also trying to educate our students. This is Red Ribbon Week, and, you know, it couldn't fall at a better time. I happen to be my grade-level teacher for Red Ribbon Week, and you're talking about statistics, and it's really funny because today was the lesson was the statistics of alcohol-related deaths and injuries.
Wow.
And this is from the 1990s, because I've had this material for about 10 years now. But on the average, every hour, two people die, which is 17,520 people a year. And my example was it would be like blowing Stephenville up every year.
Wow.
And then 3 out of 10 people during their lifetime will be involved in an alcohol-related accident of some kind.
2 out of 3?
3 out of 10.
3 out of 10.
3 out of 10 people will be, and this is, again, this is 10-year-old material. I can't help but think we're not a little bit farther along than that. When we send these things home every day, they send them back. And what will break your heart, I've been doing this, I don't know, 10, 11 years now. And when you get it back, one of the comments is, how can we make this material better? And what you find is what will break your heart is when the child in their handwriting puts down there, make my mama or daddy quit drinking.
Wow. That is powerful stuff. And you know, when this comes from a child, all this child wants is to love his mom, to love his dad. And when this kind of information comes from the child, the child is actually telling us here, Barry, there are times when my mama and my daddy are just absolutely unlovable.
Right.
I can't.
Right.
And they probably beat their children many times.
Possibly. I don't see evidence of that. If I did, it'd be my responsibility as a teacher to report that. I don't see that evidence. But there definitely is a problem there in neglect. And you know, as a teacher, if I didn't love kids and didn't love to work with kids and help them, I'd be in a whole lot better paid business than that. But again, it's just sad that when I was listening to your statistics about the eighth graders and the 10th graders and so forth, every year the grade level I teach, every kid there says, we will not be drinking when we get in high school. They all at my grade level, they say, you know what, we're going to be the first group to all of us not drink. And the sad thing is, like I said, I've been in this 8 to 10 years, and yet we know that's not true. By the time they get there and get the peer pressure and just the simple temptations of it, they give in to it. And I'll just hang up and listen to y'all talk.
Well, you know, that peer pressure is something very powerful with our young people.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's hard for them to overcome that type of peer pressure. And they may at a young age, because they've seen what their parents have done, they've seen the evil of it, they don't want to be a part of it. But then when they get on a little bit older, and all these other kids get involved in it and start pushing it, it's hard to say no.
It's very hard to say no. And I've looked up this statistic and got the bibliography on it. 65% of all child abuse cases involve alcohol. 65%. And that comes from H.L. Shirley, Social Drinking, The Work of the Flesh.
And let me mention that child abuse is not necessarily always physical abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be not just necessarily beating, but if you're not giving your kids what they need for clothing because you're drinking too much, or drinking all your money away, or if you're not giving them the milk and food they need because you're drinking it away, or if you're left at home alone because daddy and mom are out drinking somewhere, that's abuse.
Right.
And alcohol is a major contributor to all of that.
It's astounding that we can throw all of these stats out, that we can accumulate all of these stats, and still, it's one of the biggest industries in this United States of America, Tom.
That's right.
It is one of the biggest money makers in the United States of America. It does no good at all. Everything that you read about it is bad and evil and hard on righteousness. And we started this program by quoting Proverbs chapter 14, verse 34. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. So if it's there, why is it so glamorized? Why is it so enticing and made to be enticing by all of these big companies? The only people that are going to profit from this are the makers of the brew.
That's exactly right. And you know, not only does alcohol affect us socially with regard to child abuse and deaths on the road, but you know, there are some medical effects behind alcohol that we also need to be realized with regard to the how it affects us physically. You know, alcohol is a powerful drug that affects the mind and many other parts of the body. It is very addictive and causes us to lose control, and sometimes even after the first drink. You know, sometimes alcohol can have such an effect on people that they become an alcoholic and never intended to become one because it is that which is very addictive. And you know, alcohol is a depressant.
Mm-hmm.
That acts on the brain and the central nervous system. It's an irritant that irritates many tissues of our body. For example, One medical report says that it is the greatest single irritant that we ingest. For example, alcohol irritates the esophagus, the stomach, the intestines, the pancreas. It inflames the liver, causes toxic hepatitis. In fact, just one shot of alcohol increases the number of dying liver cells significantly. And it also washes zinc and magnesium and other traces of minerals out of our body. And it also washes calcium out of our bones. It just causes so many evil effects to our body that why would I want a person to want to put that into their bodies?
The whole thing, when you look at it, it's kind of like selling poison, and convincing people that the poison is the effects of the poison will override the result of it, because it will kill you.
Isn't that the devil again painting
Absolutely.
A beautiful picture on something that's very evil?
Absolutely.
Again, every time you look at a alcoholic beverage, think about maggot pie, because that is beautiful on the outside, but it's going to tear you up on the inside. No matter how beautiful you make it look with those gorgeous women on the radio,
that's right,
it's still something very much full of evil.
Well, when we look at we look at the taking of this alcoholic beverage, we can understand that it will lower the inhibitions. And it will lower the self-control of an individual. And as people of God, Tommy, we've got to be temperate people. And that word temperate is a word that I really love that the Bible uses that we don't use much anymore. Mm-hmm. And that word temperate means self-control.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot be in control of self if we have used this alcoholic beverage to lower the inhibitions. This is where people get out of their own mind, if you will, and they use it as an excuse. Oh, well, he was drinking. And it used to be even worse than it is now, because people would use this excuse. Well, you know, he's a funny guy when he drinks, and he was drinking, and he really didn't mean to get angry at his wife. He really didn't mean to get angry at his children. He really didn't mean to wreck his car. He really didn't mean to lose his job. And the family and every loved one that is associated with this individual, because of his lack of self-control, they are going to suffer for it.
You know, that's one of the things we talked about not too many weeks ago. We're talking about the Christian graces.
Amen.
And being temperance and having self-control. And it's been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that one drink affects us immediately in our regard to our self-control. And so we've got to realize that I want to be in control. And when we lack control, that's when the problem happens in our lives. That's also our lack of control what hurts other people. You know, it's one thing for you to hurt yourself, but it's another thing when you're involved in alcohol and you're hurting somebody else. How many people have mourned looking over their grave, knowing that what has happened to their loved ones happened by a drunk driver on the road who lost self-control?
That would be an absolute horror story in itself. We have a caller on the line. Caller, would you give us your first name and your question or your comment, please?
Hi, this is Deborah.
Yes, Deborah.
And I'm also a teacher, so as Barry said, we see a lot of things at work. One of the comments on a man that called earlier, he talked about Project Graduation, and one of the things that irritates me about that is because why don't parents care the other 364 days of the year in addition to, you know, graduation. Another one was there's been parents to give kids alcohol parties as eighth graders, kind of celebrating their entrance into high school. And another comment I had was people care about their bodies as far as exercising and watching their cholesterol and making sure they eat the right foods, but yet they turn around and drink and get drunk. Doesn't make sense to me.
Well,
and then my last comment was I had a conversation with a man several years ago that drank, and I said, don't you realize how many brain cells that destroys? And he says, oh, I've got plenty of brain cells. And I said, well, how do you know it's not damaging the ones that you're needing? And he didn't have an answer for me.
Well,
anyway, those are just some random thoughts that I was writing down notes as I was listening to y'all.
Well, thank you.
Hang up and let you talk about it.
Well, we appreciate those random thoughts. I want to take one of these, and the one I want to take is that the permission to give these parties and actually buy the alcohol for their own kids and use an argument and a justification. Well, they're going to get it somewhere. I just soon have them here at the house, and I'll give it to them, and I'll make sure nobody leaves and such as that. Several years ago, and maybe many people in this part of the country will remember this, a tragic, absolutely tragic situation happened at Cross Plains, Texas, where this parent was buying this alcohol for these kids, these high school kids. They got all drunk up, went into the high school building, and did $250,000 worth of fire damage in there. They burnt the building down, or they tried to. They didn't get it all done. They did get the building repaired. But here we've got $250,000 worth of damage to a building with kids that were given alcohol by parents, and no one got their hand slapped. We have some of the kids, they got in trouble for a little while, but my question there is, Tom, why did those parents that gave that alcohol to them, why did they get off scot-free?
It seems to me that giving a eighth grader freedom to use alcohol is like giving a two-year-old a loaded gun.
Absolutely.
Because all you're going to do is kill somebody. I mean, you might be there, and you might make sure everything's okay this time, but when they drink it this time, who's to say you're not going to, where are you going to be next time?
Mm-hmm.
Or at some other party? You're just setting them up for failure. You're setting them up for death. You're setting up others for death as well by allowing such thing. Besides that, it is against the law.
Yes.
For a minor to drink alcohol.
It's against the law. And this brings up another question. Who drew up the age of drunkenness? That's always kind of intrigued me just a little bit. Who drew that age up? But why is alcohol okay for adults to get drunk and stupid who can actually drive, but it's not okay for children who can't drive, don't even know how to drive? Why is it wrong for them? Why is it any less dangerous for an adult to do it than it would be a child? All of these things, they just go back to what the Bible has to say, Tom, about God knowing best.
Exactly right.
This temperance, this self-control, this soberness that we're talking about here, these are fruits of the Spirit. They are part of the Christian graces, and the exact opposite of it, the work of the flesh, drunkenness, is right in there in the middle of it.
That's exactly right. I'm just amazed about how inconsistent people can be.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about giving your child alcohol because you want to take care of them, and you turn right around and you try to keep them safe in other areas where, you're just setting them up for failure. And again, the Bible knows what is best. And the Bible says alcohol use is a sin, and to be involved in it is a sin. And why would you want... I just, beyond me, why would you want to give your kids a loaded gun and say, go have fun, but do it responsibly?
Yeah, and that's a big kicker. Do it responsibly. That is probably the main thing that these beer commercials have. Well, folks, we are just about out of time. We have certainly appreciated your time here with us. I do hope it is my hope and prayer that we will all do our patriotic duty. We have some things that need to be fixed, and we need to be represented in a better way. And we have an opportunity here this November 2nd and the early voting period that we have right now. We have an opportunity to make the righteousness that upholds this nation, we have an opportunity to put it back in place here, Tom, and we need to do that. We need to quit voting with our pocketbooks and start voting based upon the will of God. What is right according to God? Because it is His righteousness that exalts this nation, not somebody else's righteousness. And we would encourage you to go out and vote like God is with you. Vote what God would have to be on your as your representative, or as whatever it is that you're voting for. Vote like God was right there with you. We would encourage you to vote. It's a patriotic duty, but it's not only a patriotic duty; it is a patriotic privilege as an American. And Tom, I'm going to sign off by saying, God bless our troops and God bless America. I'm going to let you have the last word.
And as we sign off tonight, let us always remember to be like those noble Bereans who received the word with all readiness of mind and searched the scriptures daily whether those things were so, Acts 17, verse 11. And may we always speak where the Bible speaks and do Bible things in Bible ways and call Bible things by Bible names, and we can't go wrong. And I pray tonight that God would bless you as you do His will.
Amen.